maybe tied up with the baby, she may not be able to come, but I wanted to bring, you ever see those little tiny plastic people that connect to each other with the hands? Little children's toys. Because the family relationships are going to be a little complicated in order to understand the case of the baby, and therefore I'm going to spell it out as best I can verbally. It may be a little difficult to follow just because it's not as easy as it looks. And hopefully, if you know, maybe my wife will be able to bring those things. If can, that'll make it a little bit easier. But otherwise, I'll spell it out very carefully because the psukim by themselves do not exactly describe who's doing what to whom. So that being said, we're in Malachim. We're in Book of Kings.
Malachim
Aleph, chapter 3. It's after the dream, so it's about halfway through. I'll find it to you in a second. It's right after the dream. He comes back. Yud Zayin sounds about right. Hold on a second. Some days I have a harder time flipping. Yud Zayin. Okay, I have the word. Yud Zayin. And by the way, this should take about half the time, about 20, 30 minutes to do this, and then afterwards, Dalet is a very straightforward parak, so we actually could probably do a parak and a half today. What?
Third chapter.
Third chapter starts with Yitchatein Shlomo, that's the marriage to Bat Paro, which we've pretty much been through, and we're now on actually Tet Zayin, Az Tavona Shtei Nashim Zonot. Now, what we've already established is that the events that take place here are irrevocably connected to the dream that he sees and the wisdom that he sees. Now, one senses that because he uses his wisdom to solve the case of the living baby. Nonetheless, it not only tells you that is what we saw is that what he was hoping for was the wisdom to be able to manage the massive amount of people that he inherited. And the question is, how did these two women? How does that directly? I mean, was this the only thing that could have showed off his chachma? Couldn't we have? We had kings visiting. We had all kinds of things. Was this the best possible way to show off the chachma? And if so, why is this the best possible? Why does this attach itself to the dream so neatly? So, in order to do that, we'll have to go through the dream. Az tavona shtei nashim zonot al hamelech v'tam modna lefanav. Two, and I'm going to translate the words as literally as one can in this case, although it's not for sure. Then, thereafter, which the word az also tells you, it's very connected to the previous dream. Two prostitutes came to the king. And they stood before the king. Now, zonot can mean, good evening, zonot can mean other things. Zonot can come from the word mizonot, i.e. food servers. It is certainly possible. Zonot could also have a sense, I'm sure there's enough seats, you don't have to stand. There's on the other side of the table, and I'm sure there's enough. Please, don't stand, you make me all nervous. I won't be able to teach, I'll start to babble. Zonot could also, without proving it and going through Tanakh to prove it, Zonot could give a sense of unattached women who didn't get married or didn't really have close relationships before they wound up having babies. It doesn't necessarily mean people who prostituted themselves. But back then, you know, out of wedlock children was not often, just wasn't that often. And therefore, one might also find the word in the sense of loose or not completely, let's say, not your highest scale of society. While we could say that they were prostitutes, it's certainly possible, it's not necessarily to do so. What's interesting, however, is one of Chazal's opinion, and Chazal don't know what to make of this either. There's a medrash, which I didn't bring, so I'll just quote it for you outside. Chazal say that there's such a myriad of opinions, they don't know what's going on. It's like, it's not that they don't know what's going on, but the fact that there's so many opinions in Chazal show you that there's some confusion about exactly what's going on with this story. I'm going to give you one opinion, but of course, nothing to say that my opinion is better than others. I'm going to give you the Meiri's opinion, who actually shows up, he quotes it in the Gemara, and it's a brilliant opinion, and that's what we'll get to by the end of the class. According to one opinion of Chazal, these were ruchot. Now, ruchot by itself is a strange word. What does Chazal mean by ruchot? So ruchot means spirits. Sometimes ruchot is actually malachim, angels. Where do we have that? We'll have it later in Malachim, where these spirits, the ruchot, are all sitting around. They're all sitting around God, and they're trying to figure out what to do with poor King Achab to get him to go and throw his life away. So Haruach ba and says, "I'll tell you what we're going to do." That ruach, by the way, is probably none other than the Satan, the guy who likes to trip us up. So who are these ruchot? Are they shadim? If that's true, if that's how you translate it, then what does Chazal mean by that? Chazal must mean that these women were coming to trip up Moshe. To trip up Shlomo. It's hard to say that. When Chazal is so terse, ruchotain, that's almost as hard to translate as your Tanakh itself. But my guess is the impression is that these are things that their goal was to show God that Shlomo doesn't have exactly what you said he did. That's one opinion, which is a very interesting opinion. However, we'll take a more humanistic approach to this. What's that?
Wasn't God supposed to give him this?
Well, you know, the Shatan's always a big chutzpahnik. And, of course, keep in mind that when Chazal are doing these drashim, they're never entirely meant to be taken literally. The question is, what's the message? And, unfortunately, the message is so terse, it's hard to get your... I don't know exactly what they meant by Ruchot. What they also might have meant is they might have meant that it was part of the original prophecy. It was essentially a prophetic event. If it was Ruchot, this could be translated as Malachim, angels, which it can. It's viable to translate it that way. That means that this whole event never took place and that the whole thing was a prophecy. That's another possible interpretation of that Chazal. I don't know which way to go on that Chazal. I just wanted to present to you that something, according to some things Chazal, there's something supernatural going on. But I just wanted to give you a taste of it because it's fun, but afterwards I want to back off and take a more, let's assume they were what they were, which were two lower class women.
In art school,
what do they translate? I'd love to see.
As innkeepers.
Innkeepers. Okay, so they take the Mizanot approach. Of course, art school is going to do that. You know, art school translates Shir HaShirim without any, you know, body parts whatsoever. So that's just the nature of art scroll, is to give you the from view. You know, art scroll, that, you know, you just wouldn't know that there was any know there was anything in art scroll. It's art scroll always goes to Rashi. Bnei Elohim are not the children of gods, they're the children of officers. It's all Rashi, and if Rashi's not firm enough, it's not even Rashi, the truth is. So that's the nature of art scroll. Is there another English opinion that we have? What? Harlots, okay. I think this is based on the JPS translation.
Yeah.
This one also talks about innkeeper.
Harold, what is that? Harlots?
Oh, Yaakov Ellman says innkeeper?
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you something. Yaakov Ellman is a Talmud Chacham. You know, there's no doubt he teaches Tanakh and Gemara in YU. He's a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he is a scholar. I mean, he's a very, very firm, you know, a very, very careful guy. But not everybody who put together the JPS was from, mostly traditional, you know, there were some from people on the JPS group, but not everybody was. So if Yaakov Ellman says innkeeper, is certainly no reason to toss it away. And therefore, I think that the best way to do it, without saying that compromise is not necessarily a good thing, but here I think it's a good thing. I think the best way to look at it is the bluest collar of the blue collar. I think that's a way to go about this translation. I think that covers all your bases, and I think it gives you the impression of what's going on. These two blue-collar workers come up to Shlomo and say, I want a court case. And that, by the way, as I've mentioned before, that by itself, we're not going to focus on that today, but that by itself is very indicative. I always say, whenever I teach this, can you imagine two of the bluest blue-collar workers walking up the steps of the Supreme Court, knocking on the door and saying, Mr. Rehnquist, I got a case for you. Sure. Sit down. We have time. We'll take care of you. It's a tremendous thing. It really is a tremendous thing. Now, you could ask, how is that possible? I guess he had a lot of good, what do those judges have, the people to help him out?
Clerks.
I guess he had a whole bunch of clerks that knew how to sift them through as quickly as possible. The question is it really feasible for a king to take all the judgments in the land? Or maybe was Yitro right? Should you really set up a massive set of judges that don't get to the top unless it's really a Supreme Court type of case? I have to say, in this particular case, this argues against Yitro. And I think justifiably so. What was incredible about his wisdom, you could say his wisdom was always fast. Instead of having to think about it for 48 hours like everybody else, he was like, yeah, you guys are guilty, you guys are innocent. So maybe that was, maybe what God was giving him was not so much the fact that he was incredibly smart qualitatively, but that he was speed-wise, he was able to process faster than other people, which is also a possibility. But the fact that these two lowest of the lowest class workers get to come in and talk to the king, that's a tremendous thing for Shlomo. That means he was, what? You're right, good point. Yeah, they didn't have any other. There was no other, but there was nobody else to help them out.
A little cynical, maybe they caught his eye.
What's that?
Okay.
No, I don't think so, because it says as tavona shtei, as tavona v'ta'amod na lefei ha'melech. You know, there's the sense of procession. I don't sense that that's the idea. To be honest, the reason why I don't, and I'm critical against Shlomo, where I think Tanakh is being critical, and sometimes I do think they're being critical against Shlomo. So therefore, since the Tanakh is not one to cover up pimples, and it's one to say where there's a problem, when there's a problem. In this case, since there's no such taste of that, I don't see any reason to... I don't believe that it's fair game to put it in. I say it's impossible, but it doesn't strike me as what the text is indicating. Anyway, let's get
maybe,
to the actual...
Maybe this is where he's just starting out as, you know, giving his advice. And
and therefore, oh, and therefore he's taking the low-level cases?
Yeah, you know, he's starting out. You know, as he goes along, he's getting more and more choosy.
It could be. I'm not entirely comfortable with that, only because these are sort of like, these I think are symbolic for the rest of his, I think these become symbolic, or we never hear that he, you know, never took anybody afterwards. Also, keep in mind that he's not entirely starting out. He's not a dumb politician. He had his brother off for being rebellious and trying to grab the Pilagas. He had the chief of the general off. He switched the Kohen Gadol from the house of Eviatar to the house of Tzadok. He's not as young
matured,
as...
He
is. He's, you know, and even when David is giving his last will and testament, he says, Atah Chachamata. I don't think Shlomo's quite as young and as naive as we tend to think.
Well, he was young when he became king.
I'm not even sure he's quite as young as we think. Well, hang on. I think so, in many, many cases. So I'm more comfortable with the idea that this is more of a symbol. Not that it didn't really take place, but that this was the symbolic case that showed what kind of leader he was. And let's take a look at the case and see what it was. Tomar Isha Achat. The one woman says, I don't know, maybe I'll have to, I don't want to pick people now. I don't have my little colored people, so maybe I'll have to pick, I don't know if we want to play act this out, because it gets quite difficult. But maybe I'll take men and do it with men so that it's not embarrassing. I don't want to cuss or someone put and make any women uncomfortable. So maybe I'll take men to play the various mothers. So we'll see what happens. Vatomer, that case will be a shir, you'll not likely forget. Vatomer Aisha Hachat. So one woman says, Bi Adoni, please, Master, Ani v'Aisha Zot, me and this woman, there's always a funny phrase, Aisha Zot, this woman, hey Leah, how are you? Ah, you came and saved the day. Do you have the color? First of all, I'm glad you're here. I'm so happy you made it, and the color people. Okay. Now, we got two women. I'm going to make them two different colors. I got, skirts. I need a red and a green for a reason. And let me, the reason why I'm not using red is because I need red for the dead baby. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put it right up here. I apologize to, I don't want to put it on this, but I'll put it on the Jastro. Let's see what else. Okay, so, see if I get that works. I got the two women. No, that's no good, little child. I'm going to have to compromise. Green woman. Good. Two women. Everybody okay so far, or is this... Okay.
No.
Let's continue on. Now, what does she say? Vatoma Isha Achad Biyadani Aniva Isha Zot. First of all, it always makes me laugh when I get to Isha Zot, which is translates as, you know, that woman. So whenever I see that, I have to say I get a good laugh out of it for political reasons. So Yosvot Bivayit Achad. We live in one house. Va'eled Imah Babayit. I gave birth to her while we were in the house. The Eled Ima, I gave birth while she was there, which means we were living together. We were roomies in that house. The impression, by the way, the reason why that's being played up is to give you the impression that what's being emphasized here over and over is there is no witnesses. There are no witnesses. The only witnesses are the two women. And it's not even an issue of the fact that women aren't allowed to be witnesses or not allowed to be witnesses. Even if it were two men, you'd have a problem because they're both nogeya b'davar. They're both involved in the case, and therefore they can't be witnesses. You can't make the plaintiff and the defendant. They can't be the witnesses. They can't be the case witnesses. It just doesn't work that way. Vayihi bayom ha'shlishi lelidati. Now here's something very interesting. Here's what I want to do. I'm going to take two different sized babies if I can find them. And the reason why I'm doing that is we're going to find out that one of the babies is 1 day old, and the other one of the babies is 3 days old. Now, normally I would say, who cares? 1 day, 3 day. But if the Tanakh is going, Tanakh is famous for skipping 40 years. 75 years of Avram's life, we have no idea what he's doing. 60 years, Avram is in the desert, couldn't care less. I got 40 years, the Jews wandered in the desert, couldn't care less. But the Tanakh feels like telling us that it was on the third day of my giving birth. We have the ages of the babies. To my mind, Tanakh doesn't put it in anything that's extraneous. Certainly in the Torah, where every letter is special, but even in Tanakh, you know, this is probably Natan writing this stuff originally. Natan, one of his students, he's not going to throw in facts which are extraneous to our understanding of the case. And I'll prove that to you later, because when Shlomo repeats the case, he does not repeat it word for word. And the proof is that the Tanakh is happy to paraphrase when necessary, and therefore when it's not paraphrasing, when it's giving you details, the details must be important. That's the basis that I'm going to rely on. So, the woman says, "Vayhi bayom ha'shlishi lelidati," which means this woman, let's call her the green woman, gives birth. I'm going to call her the yellow woman just because I have that color. The plaintiff in the case has given birth to a three-day-old baby. I'm making it the larger of the children. It's a little too large, obviously. Nobody would want to give birth to a baby that after 3 days looked quite like that. What? You just want, the only problem is that you use both smaller sizes? Oh, there are? The littlest one has what?
Straight out. Do you have a blue one?
Oh, I see. Oh, so that's the little one. And then there's another small one I don't see.
You don't play enough.
Okay.
I
came up prepared. Oh, the yellow one. Okay, so here's the yellow one. So I got a three-day-old baby. There. Now, what happens after 3 days? And then this other woman gave birth. Now, I need even a smaller one. I'm not sure how to get a smaller one, but hopefully you'll just be able... What's that? No, that's not how the story ends. That's not how the story ends.
And that one's irreversible.
Well, hopefully we'll get the basic idea. Yeah, you know what I'm going to do? I hate to do. I feel like I'm. I don't want. Yeah, they're both the same size, I think.
No.
I'll tell you. If this is smaller than this one?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Perfect. Fantastic. They made the girls smaller than the boys. That's fine. And by the way, we don't know what the sex of the babies are. Let's assume... I'm sorry, we do. The sex of the babies are both sons. They're both sons, and that's important, too. We'll see why. Now, what happens? Vanachu yadav yachdav einzar. We were together. There was no stranger there. Itanu babayit. Zulati shnayim anachu vayit. We were the only ones in the house. Now, why is this repetitive? For a very important reason. What they're trying to say is... We're the only ones. I want you to know, don't go, Shlomo, don't go looking for no witnesses because it's not going to happen. It's me and this other woman. It's the plaintiff, and the green is the defendant. Right. All right. Let's continue on. Pasuk Yotet, verse 19. Vayamat ben Haisha hazot laila. This baby, the green baby, becomes a red baby. A dead baby. That's the accusation. This woman who gave birth that night, last, to the newborn baby, that newborn baby died the same night. How did it die the same night? It died as follows. You know what? That's going to be impossible to do. We'll have to keep the green. I'm not sure how to represent death, so if you just keep in your mind that the accusation is that this baby is dead. Okay. What? What's that? I wish I could put something like a tag around or something. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. Am I overdoing this? Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. All right, let's continue on. Yan, okay. Asher shachva alav. Asher is, by the way, here, kasher. When? Where? After which she rolled over on him. She slept on him. Vatakam, which means he suffocated. Vatakam, Rahman al-San. Vatakam betoch alayla. Vatikachet b'ni metzli.
I was going to question, is there an accusation that you did that on purpose?
No.
She fell asleep.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think there's an accusation of murder here.
Okay.
Vatakam betoch alayla hazot. Vatikachet b'ni metzli. Vamatcha yishena. She took my baby while I was sleeping. Vatashkiveyu b'cheika. Ve'et b'nahame tishkiva b'cheiki. So she took my live 3-day-old baby. She gave me the 1-day-old baby into mine, and I wound up with the baby. So I'm not going to play it out because you guys are all, I think you're all saying I'm clearly overplaying it, but you see the switch. Okay, let's continue on. Va'akum b'boker lehinike b'ni. So I got up to nurse my baby. Hinemeit. I have a baby that's dead. Ve'et bonein alav b'boker, and I'm looking at him in the morning. Now, the word boker is repeated twice here. That's because the second boker should probably be translated in the light of the day. Mm-hmm. I don't know if your translation is going to do that, but that's probably the best translation. B'boker meaning at the light of the day. You should know, by the way, the word boker from the word mivaker, to investigate. Mivaker is to investigate. Because the word boker means when things become clear and clarified, as opposed to erev, which comes from the word irbuvya, which is a mixture when light and dark meet together and nobody knows quite what's going on. And that's the etymological sources for those words, I believe. V'hinei lo hayav ni asher yaladi. And guess what? The baby that I'm holding, that's not my baby. My baby was a 3-day-old baby. I got a 1-day-old baby. And I want you to know something. I believe you could tell the difference. And I would like, right now, since I'm a man and I tend to be, you know, guys tend to not notice these things. I'm not even sure I can tell you the color of my baby's eyes. But I would like to ask women, would it be fair to say that you can tell the difference between a one-day-old baby and a newborn baby born that day, less than 24 hours, and a three-day-old baby. Is it possible to distinguish between them?
Absolutely. The coloring is different.
There's something about that new, brand newborn baby which looks different.
Right.
So here the
What's that?
She knows her own. She knows the hairline and the wrinkles on the wrists and everything.
I want to say I agree with you. I agree with you. And I believe that it was, I am throwing in the fact, not that she recognized it by 3 days, but that she could have recognized it by 3 days, and I'll show you why that's important. But I'm sure you're right. I'm sure she looked at the baby and simply knew that it wasn't hers.
So there have been cases, you know, even nowadays of
babies getting mixed up and not... Because
yeah.
It is hard. The truth is, at an early stage, it is not entirely clear. Sometimes it does get a little foggy who looks like
who. After several days?
Well, after 1 day.
After 1 or 2 days.
But they could both be the same age.
Yeah.
And I think that's what she's claiming. She's claiming, listen, I could tell my baby. I could tell my baby. And maybe that's why the difference between the 1 day and the 3 days is important. Maybe she could just tell. But the bottom line is, we still have no witnesses. She's just saying, I woke up and I saw right. The reason why I'm here is I saw right away it was a trick. That's why I knew right away she stole. I knew right away.
No,
so,
excuse
I'm sorry,
me.
Please.
I think the reason she's emphasizing the age of the baby is because if she just says, that's my baby, I recognize it, the other one can say, that's my baby, I recognize
right.
it, and there are no objective criteria.
That's correct.
But if you can tell a one-day baby from a three-day baby...
That gives you something to play on.
Right.
I believe that's what she's claiming. Unfortunately, we're going to see it's going to bite her. It's going to come back and bite her. And you'll see why in a second. As soon as we see what happens to the babies, you'll see why that she steps right in. It's unfortunately she gives Shlomo a little too much information. It's like Doctor. It's like Encyclopedia Brown. We'll see. I think Shlomo's got too much to work for, and I think that's why he's brilliant. Anyway, let's see.
In terms of Adam, though, isn't there someone that delivered?
No, by them, each other, by themselves. Yeah, absolutely, and they took care of it themselves. And also, I want to tell you something. I want you to think about something. In Jewish law, when there are no Adam. And I have a talit in my hand, and you go to court case, and you say, that's my talit, you lose. Possession is 10/10 of the law in Judaism where there are no edim. In a case where we both get to, there's a mishnayot in Bava Batra, you can simply look them up. If we're both holding the talit, and then there's cases of what if I'm holding the tip of the talit and you're holding most of the talit, but everybody agrees that if I'm holding the talit, it is, what do you call it? It's the burden of, the burden of proof lies on the person that does not have possession. That's Jewish law without edim. Which means, according the simple solution, according to this case, you should think about, is very simple. Whoever's got the live baby holds on to the live baby, which means the plaintiff has no grounds to stand on according to strict religious law. Shlomo should theoretically solve himself all kinds of headaches and say, sorry, can't help you, goodbye. I like you, I sympathize, you're nice, but I got a legal system here and I can't start overriding my legal system for the sake of... the fact that you're telling me that you had a stolen baby. So this is a very important idea, which we'll get back to in a second. Vatomer ha'isha acheret, the other woman, says, lo, kivniyacha yuvnecha meit. No, it's not true. By the way, I think it's very interesting. She is not talking to the king. Lo, kivniyacha yuvnecha meit. Your child is the one that is dead. Do you see? The other woman referred to her third person, Bina. The second woman is saying there was no swap. It was your... By the way, she's not denying the days. It's your three-day-old baby that you rolled or must have rolled onto, and I'm very sorry for you, but this is my baby that I gave birth to today, and that's the end of the story. And it's very interesting that the second woman talks directly to the first woman rather than the first woman who says, Aishaha Hazot, you know, speaks to a third person. These are, I think, to my mind, clues upon the overall nature of the characters. I could be maybe making a little bit more out of it than I should, but it's certainly possible. I happen to know who's going to win in the end, and it's the second woman. So maybe based on the fact that I know the end of the story, I'm fitting the facts to support it. But nonetheless, I feel the difference between the way that the two express themselves. By the way, the Malbim points out that the fact that she starts with B'ni Hachai, mine is the live baby, she starts focusing on the live baby rather than the dead baby. What did the other woman focus on to the king? It was the dead one, right? Which pasuk is that? We don't let it. Vayamat ben ha'isha azod laila sheshofa v'atakam b'toch ha'layla v'tikach et b'ni me'etzli. I can't say she's specific, it's not the same language, but she does talk about the death of the baby. Now you could just say that makes sense because she's got to present her case, so she has to explain the reasoning. But it is also a focus the Malbim says. The fact that the second woman says, no, b'ni achai, that's indicative. Yeah. And by the way, we'll see how we can prove that it is the second woman who turns out to be the right woman, because when you read the text, it's not so clear. It is the green woman with the one-day-old baby. That doesn't help at all. Well, this could be one. I thought it was a clever idea, but there's another idea that goes, another good theory destroyed by practice. If the other one says, here's the opposite. Lo ki b'necha meit, that's where the Malbim posts. No, you have the dead baby, which I'm holding, by the way, uvni achai, the one that you're holding. And that's what the Malbim says, the first woman, the second woman who's to speak, but the first woman, this pasuk, focuses on the live one, and then when the first woman speaks again in this pasuk, then she focuses on the dead baby. Vatadaber nalefnei melech. They both speak in front of the king. Vayomer melech zot omeret. So now the king does something weird. Zot omeret, that is to say, zeh b'ni achai, this one says, my child is live, and then uvnecha met. Now, right away, that's very good, because I'm glad you said that, because your temptation to say that Shlomo is not a chacham, he's actually an idiot, right? Let's go over the facts, because I'm a little confused about this. So this woman said this, and this woman said that. Why repeat the case? You just heard the case. It's very strange. What did Chazal say? On Chazal say, from here we learn that a judge always has to repeat a case. It's legally, the judge has to repeat a case exactly as it's, and this is a halacha. Based on this pasuk, the halacha is that when two plaintiffs and defendants present their case, the judge, before he's allowed to rule on it, he must repeat the words that the plaintiff and the defendant said. But what's weird here? He doesn't present the whole thing. He just presents that last pasuk. So either you could say that the Tanakh is just paraphrasing a little bit. Let's all squeeze it down to the facts. But I tend to see also, Harold, what you saw, which is, I think that there's something already percolating in his mind. Zed Benia, this one, so let's see what they said. This one said this is the live baby, another one is the dead baby. And this one says, no, that's the dead baby and live baby. I think there's something percolating on Shlomo's mind. I don't know if he knows for sure, but I think something's percolating on his mind. Now, the next pasuk bothers me to no end, and I'll tell you why. The first two words of pasuk chaf dalid are words that immediately should speak volumes and give you nightmares. Vayomer hamelech. What's the problem with pasuk chaf dalid starting off with Vayomer hamelech? No? King speaking in verse 23. Right. That's very strange, narratively. If he's already, and not only that, yeah, there is a break, by the way. There's an intentional break right there. The king speaks and says ABC. The king speaks and says DEF. What impression does that give you?
That there was a gap in between.
Exactly right. There was something was going on between those two psukim. And that's very important. I learned that actually from the Chama Leibowitz. I did not. I was, fortunately, she was already very old when I got to Israel, so I can't say I'm, the Chama Leibowitz was famous for her followers, and I can't say I'm one of them, but I did hear a few shirim from Chama Leibowitz. And one of them was a shir on Avraham Avinu, where she noticed that Avraham Avinu was talking, and then Avraham Avinu was talking again in the next passage. She said, that's got to talk to you. That's got to mean something. That means that there's communication going the other way in a two-way conversation. Here, something is going on between the time that Shlomo says, this one says this, and this one says this. But take a look at Pasuk Chaptav. Let's get a sense of how the king feels. Bring me the sword. I want the sword right now. Which means one thing is for sure about Shlomo and his opinion of the case, which is what?
He's made up his mind.
I don't know which way, and I think you could say two ways. Either he's made up his mind that it's impossible to make up your mind, therefore I'll kill the baby. Now, you could say that. And you could say that Shlomo is out of his cotton-picking mind. You could say that. And I have to say, Chazal in some cases are critical here. There is one opinion. I told you, we had that Chazal with opinions all over the place, like 5, 6, 7 different opinions. One of the opinions was that at that point, the bat kol had to come out of the heaven to keep Shlomo from making a terrible mistake. And it said, Oy la'am asher ben asher melech nar, who is a young boy, who doesn't have common sense. However,
that's
it's... What's that?
That's a
Mishlei. Yes, it's a quote, correct. It's a quote from Mishlei. I don't think so. I don't get that sense. But therefore, if you say, the only fact I know is he's made up his mind. If I say that he's made up his mind to refuse to make up his mind and therefore split the baby in half, I could say that. But if I say that he's made up his mind and he knows which way the case is going to go, then why bring the sword in the first place?
To demonstrate it to everyone else.
What's that?
To demonstrate it to everyone.
It's possible, or it's possible that this is one of your classic, what do they call this? I'm not a lawyer, but they have these little bluff techniques. Yeah. Beautiful courtroom theatrics. And such a big deal. He doesn't even come back with his sword. Look at the words. Chuli cherev, go get me a cherev. Vayaviyu a cherev lefnei ha-melech. And then vayomer ha-melech, gizru et ha-yel et ha-chai. Cut the baby in half. It's so theatrical. It's so dramatic. I think what he's trying to get to, it's like a beautiful courtroom scene. So it's a beautiful, intense courtroom scene. And let's see what winds up in the end. And here's the tricky part that most people don't see. Not that, you know, it's very difficult to see. Vayomel gizru et ha-yel, pasuk chafei, 25, achai l'shnayim, utznu et ha-chatzi l'chad, chatzi l'chad. Give the top, I don't know, the top half, bottom half, I don't know if there's come down the side, who knows, but one baby was going to, I don't know if they were going to measure it, but bottom line is baby would be cut in half. Nobody gets a baby. And maybe that's what Shlomo's trying to say. You guys can't work out your home problems? Fine, everybody suffers. Maybe. I know, that's. I don't think he was saying that, so we'll see what I think he was saying. Vatoma isha asher b'na hachai. Why?
And the woman whose son was alive.
That's correct. Yeah. But we don't know which one it is. That's you're saying that tells us which one it is, but I would argue that it doesn't. We don't know.
Exactly.
That's true, but the writing has to be sufficient for somebody to read 1,000 years later. Based on this puzzle, you actually brought up a point sort of counter to what I wanted to say, but I think therefore it's very important to emphasize. From this pasuk, we have no idea which one's the right baby. All we know is that the real baby's mother is saying, let the baby live. What we don't know, if it's the baby who was born, who gave birth to the baby 3 days ago, as accusing the other woman of stealing, or whether it's the woman who said, no, the baby that I gave birth to today is the live one, as opposed to the 3-day-old baby. Do you see? We don't know from this pasuk. Or it says, Vatomer ha'isha asher b'na ha'chai. It could have said, Ha'achat asher b'na'achai, or harishon, or something, but it leaves it very, very vague. El ha'melech kinich meru rachameha. Why did she say it? Because she had rachameha. By the way, rachameha, beautiful word. It means, what does rachamim mean? It means womb and mercy. So obviously the etymological derivation of mercy is how a mother feels about her child that's in her womb, and that's how rachamim came from the word rechem. That's one of the cases where a noun, you know, in more primitive times, people don't really have these fancy ways to express mercy, but they do have nouns which describe a womb, and those grow into first euphemistic terms, symbolic terms, and then finally they get lexicalized and normalized into the language. So he says, El HaMelech Kinich Murachem Al Bina, she was worried about her son. Vatomer Bia Adoni Tnu La Tayalud Achai. No, take the baby and give it to her. Now this, by the way, is the clue. How do we know that it's the baby with the one-day-old baby? How do we know that? Because she says, Tnu la etayeled. But who's holding the live baby? The live baby is being held by the baby who just gave birth. Everybody agrees that. Everybody agrees that the mother that gave birth today, last night, is the one holding the live baby. The one who gave the birth baby 3 days ago is claiming that she stole it. The other one is saying, I never stole it, it's still mine. But either way, when this woman says, Tnu la et ayel achai, give it to her, that tells, and the only other, and we know another fact, which is she was, in fact, the real mother of the baby. Now we know exactly who the right mother was, which is the one who had just given birth that day. So that kind of cinches it. So if anybody asks you, how do you know? You have to sort of put two and two together here.
But the Shlomo HaMelech was making a bet.
Oh, wait, no, that's what he knew for sure. We'll see. Hold on. There was no bet. He knew for sure. He knew. He had the case wrapped up, sealed, signed, delivered. He could have written a thing and sent them home and just did it. But
he bet on compassion.
No, it wasn't compassion. He bet on insanity, or not insanity. He bet on motivation. We haven't discussed the motive yet. We've discussed the court case. We haven't really been lawyers. We have everything except for motive. Right now, what does the motive look like?
Wait a minute. Before we get to that, it seems to me that neither of the women has the baby.
The
king's got the baby, or one of his courtiers, the one that was
the one with the sword, ready to cut it now.
Okay.
I don't see
that they took the baby away from the woman. Why would you assume that they took the baby?
Because they're about to.
So they bring over the sword. They split the baby.
Not holding her.
What? And they haven't got around to it. You know, he's still hanging out with the sword.
You said that the mother was holding the 3-day-old baby.
No. Oh, we don't know it's a 3-day-old baby or 1-day-old baby. The 3-day-old baby, the woman who's accusing of the other woman of stealing says it's a 3-day-old baby. She said, that's my baby, and I gave birth 3 days ago. The woman with the woman has the baby says it's a 1-day-old baby. So I said you could always tell. Obviously, it's obviously you know maybe you could tell sort of, but it's not a case of law. But keep in mind, there's another baby that you can check also. If you're Shlomo enough, there's a second baby you can check, which is you could exhume the dead baby and see, right? And let's not. I know the Tanakh never says so. All we have is a big gap from when Shlomo is not sure to when Shlomo is you know suspicious to when Shlomo is sure. I don't want to put it out. I can't. It's pure conjecture, and I'll try to prove it a little bit. I'll try to not prove it. I'll try to reemphasize it later. But I see no reason why Shlomo shouldn't have dug up the baby. Bring me the other baby. Let's see what's going on. And I tell when you put the two babies side by side, then maybe you can tell the difference between the two. If you have one baby, you don't know. It's true. It's true.
Yeah,
you don't think, because they're dead, so therefore
the
they're
still growing.
Especially when one is
dead. Okay. Okay. It's true. It's true. It's a good point.
Let me ask you a question that I want to worry.
Yes.
Shenula. Does that necessarily, literally mean give it to her as opposed to let her have?
Yes, and therefore I'm trying to prove my point from a literal reading rather than a figurative reading. I agree. You know, you're right, in both cases. Either that she doesn't even have the baby, and that's why she says tnu in plural, or it means like you were saying, Howard, which is just, you know, let her have it rather than give it to her. I'm trying to read in that tnula means physically she's
well,
got
well,
it. And
tnu is like,
but
decision.
Even if that's
let
true,
grant.
But you want to know something? I still think I'm right, and I'll tell you why. When I say tnula, it gives me, even if I don't physically have it in my hands, it still gives me the impression that it's leaving one reshut and going to another one.
Yeah.
And since the baby was in the reshut of the 1-day-old baby mother, whether she physically had it or not, she did have possession of the live baby. It's the plaintiff that's saying, that car that's in that guy's driveway, that's mine. So to my mind, new law means pass it from my possession to her possession. And therefore, even if it's figurative, I believe it's pretty conclusive. Even if it's not physical, you know, give it to her, that give her the case means That's really a plaintiff issue. That would go to the plaintiff and not go to the defendant. That's what I think.
Isn't it strange that she says, "Tenu lo etayulad hachai"?
Etayulad hachai, right?
Instead of give her my baby. What she's like admitting that it's not her child. She says, "Give him the live baby."
You know what? I think she. You know, I never thought about that. I think she's making a mental sacrifice here. She, instead of saying Tunula at the Yalad Shali, where she's saying, you know, it's my baby, but I'll let you have it. I think what she's doing is she's really saying,
keep him alive,
and I'm willing to give up rights to the baby. It's now no longer a B'ni, but it's the living,
it's the living,
live child. And you want to say, I think that also speaks volumes as to this woman's personal feelings. And Shlomo, I think if we could hear it here, I suspect that Shlomo heard it there. But let's continue the pasuk.
So what you're saying at this point is that it's the mother of the 1-day-old who has the baby and who is saying, give it to the other one.
Yes, I believe so. But we haven't even got to the hard part yet. So hold on a second. it's a very difficult case, but hopefully it will come clear soon. So she's of Atoma Yisacharet. What pasuk were we on? Oh, pasuk Chavav 26. Vahameit al tamitu. Please don't kill him. Vizoto merit gamli gamlach lo yiyu gazoru. And the second one then says, that is the baby who's the woman who's the plaintiff then says, no, it's not going to be yours, not going to be mine, kill the baby. Why does that go counterintuitive to everything we know? We always thought, if you say that the way that Shlomo knew that the mother was the right mother was because the mother was willing to give up the baby rather than watch it die, that's fine. But once the first mother says, what's the order? The first mother, the real mother says, have Rachman give it to the other woman. If the motive is what we suspected it was, which is what?
I want a kid.
I miss my kid. Then why wouldn't the second baby say, take the baby and run? And not only that, even if you were suspicious, oh, so what does the Malbim say? The Malbim or Adak, or one of them says, well, now the second woman realized that the first woman was the woman with Rachamim, so therefore she wasn't going to get the baby. So then, if you're in that situation, you're really that sneaky, and I don't know if she is, then you could say, oh, no, let her keep it. It should be her baby if you're going to kill the baby. That is, if you have a person sitting in front of you who's a big righteous person, if the woman who is faking it spoke first, then I could understand her saying, forget it. I'm afraid I'm going to lose this case, cut the baby in half. Better, you know, out of pure spite, I'd rather nobody have it than me have it. But if the other woman has already said, let the baby live, you have to be either insane to give up the baby that you want in the first place, or we misunderstand the motive altogether, which means whatever the motive is, there's something which is, in whatever the motive is, which we haven't defined yet, and I'll define because I'll tell you about the Miri in the next 10 minutes, the motive allows for one situation to be better. Whatever's driving her, there's one situation better than her actually getting the baby that's not hers, which is?
Deprive the other one of a live baby.
You're not even evil enough. So let me, I have two nice people here. There's a third possibility. She may want the baby dead. She may not be a murderer. She's not going to go killing the baby. But if the baby dies, she may have her dream come true. And then the question is, what kind of motive would allow either, what either would allow that nobody gets the baby, or that the baby being dead is actually better? Because what's clear here is the motive is not some woman who's upset about the fact that she rolled over on her baby, and I want to argue that there may be even something subconscious going on here. Not that she's a murderer. If she's a murderer, she would have taken care of both babies. That's not the issue. We're not talking about two evil women, but we're talking, the Miri's going to present a psychological case which is going to just knock your side, it'll knock my socks off every time I think about it, and it's going to make everything make sense. Yeah.
Why
does
it seem to, why does it say you are
Yalud is pass. It's actually, it's called the Yalud is like Katuv, the one that was written, like HaSefer HaKatuv. What it means, it's like passive. Nobody did it. When you say HaSefer HaKatuv, I don't know who wrote it. I don't know when it was written. It just is. It's like abstract from me. It's what's called passive participle. And what it means is it's like an ongoing state of passive. I just don't know how it got done. HaSefer HaKatuv. HaYalud Yalud. That's really what it is. Now, here's what the Miri says, and here we need a lot more little people. So here I'm gonna work it out. This is the mother. I got to do it with it because it's not going to work any other way. This is the mother who's lying. That's the plaintiff. That we've established. Here's the mother. Here's the mother who is alive and with her baby. So this baby, the three-day-old baby, is not alive. Okay, that's the situation that we have. Why would this mother want that baby dead if she was going to get it anyway? So here's what's going on according to the Meiri, and I tell you, it's just brilliant. And by the way, the Meiri, there's another opinion of Chazal. I have to tell you. The other opinion of all these opinions of Chazal, which are one big medrash in Shir Shirim, says Yevamot Hayu. They were Yevamot. It's all he says, and the Meiri Yevamot. I pause. Yevamot is the situation where a woman is married to a brother.
Oh my God.
The brother passes away, and she has no children. So therefore, she has to marry, or she doesn't have to marry, but she is asked to marry the next
brother.
Oldest brother possible in order that the children come out based on the first brother's name. Correct. Inherit the first brother's property. That's the famous Yibum Chalitza that we see. We actually don't really see it with Ruth, even though that's the theory. We don't really see it with Tamar, even though that's the theory. You don't see Yibum too much. You see kind of weird Yibums all over the place, but you don't really see it for Yibum. But that's the halacha. Now, here's what's going on. I got to remember how to do this. Two girls are married to father and son. Let me explain what I mean. The woman who is a plaintiff is married to the father. No, hold on, I'm wrong. She's married to the son. Her roommate is married to the son's father. That makes this baby her brother. I'll go through that again. The fake-out woman who wants to do away with the baby or just take the baby for herself is married to the father figure. I'll use big and small. So there's the father. The woman who's telling the truth, who has the one-day-old baby, she's married to the son. This man dies. Now, if this woman has her own baby, she's fine. She doesn't have to get married to anybody else. Why? She doesn't have to do Yibum because she has her own baby. But if the baby dies within 30 days, she is responsible to marry the brother of her husband. The brother of her husband is this little boy who's a child. She now can't marry anybody for anywhere from 9 to 13 years. If they want to get married, they could do that in 9 years, because it takes 9 years for the baby to become old enough, for a child to become old enough to understand what marriage is. And if she wants to do chalitza, because she wants to have her own nice little pretty life, she has to wait 13 years for chalitza. But she has just signed herself 9 years in emotional jail, in husband jail. She is now a widow for 9 years, waiting for her roommate's son to grow up. There are two ways to solve this problem. Take the baby and call it yours, in which case, hey, I'm not a woman who needs Yibum Chalitza. I have a son. I don't care whether my husband had 10 brothers. He's passed away, but I gave him birth to a beautiful son.
The other way to solve the problem is if she can't have the baby, the other way to do is to off the other baby. If she offers the other baby, there are no other brothers, apparently, according to the Miri, there are no other brothers, do Yimun Chalitza, and now she could also have her own life. That is a terrific motive. That's a motive that satisfies either a death of the baby or stealing of the baby, and it would even, and why, when the woman says, give her the baby, so now you can ask a good question. Why is it not rock solid proof? When the real mother said to her, you take the baby, I'll give it to you, so she's also good. She's like, she's like, I have a child, I'll do it. But Shlomo, she thought Shlomo was insane. Shlomo presented her with a real situation. Not my fault, I got a crazy king. Crazy king wants to do what? He wants to kill the baby. Rock and roll. And now I am only a Yibam, I'm not a mother also, I'm not a single mother. I don't have to worry, I'm free. And by the way, if they were zonot prostitutes, that's a big deal when you're making money. That's a big deal. You need that freedom. If you're a single woman, you don't want to be carrying around no baby. Nobody's gonna marry you. So really, she's not a murderer. She's not a terrible person. She is a person. She knows she wants to get out of trouble. She was stressed out. She was not a great woman, but she's not a murderer. Therefore, she stole the baby to solve the problem of the fact that Yibum Chalitza, and she'll live with the fact that she has a child. When Shlomo, when she thinks this new king is out of his rocker, is off his rocker, this could kill my baby, I'm scot-free. Go home. And therefore, she presents and said, go ahead, Shlomo, do it. But the truth is, Shlomo was never planning on doing it in the first place. But if Shlomo knew the motive, now the only question, this only works out altogether, the only way to define that Shlomo is not crazy is if one thing, if he knows the motive. And how is it possible for Shlomo to know the motive?
Oh, he knows the symbol.
Go check, and that's that break here in my mind. Shlomo probably went out and found out what was going on. What's that? Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question. That's a good question. That's why Chazal are going bananas about it. Well, none except for one Chazal would say Yevamot Ninhu, and from that the Miri constructs. The Miri constructs a beautiful case which works out great. It, every single pasuk is satisfied here, except for the missing pasuk about where the men were. And by the way, you could argue that in general. By the way, I could throw back that argument. We know that there were men involved because they had babies. So where were they? Right. Other pasuk, they didn't know who the fathers were. So you could say that, or you could say, well, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. That's
I mean, psychologically, the only thing I'm thinking is there's another psychological angle to it.
Yeah.
And that is, she feels like a failure. So these two women are in the house. They both had children around the same time. She feels very bad about the fact that she feels like a failure. And if the other one had a similar experience, then maybe it would make her feel better.
If they don't know,
they're both suffering.
Yeah, but once the first woman offered her the baby back in the first place, why would she want to kill the baby?
Because if she knows that she's responsible for
her. She wants the other one to be responsible, but then she won't. She'll be responsible to do that. The truth is, I stand checkmated. There's no way to completely and totally resolve all the problems in Yitzchak. They're incredibly difficult. But I have to tell you, I love the Miri's way, because one thing's for sure, the motive can't be the motive we thought. There must be another. Unless there's a psychological weirdness going on. Also, because I don't want to take you too late. One thing is for sure, this whole section has to do with the Chachma of Shlomo. It strikes me as weird to present a case where Shlomo is bananas. If the whole motive of Shlomo is Chachma, then the sword business has to be set up. And if the sword business has a set up, then it must be that he knew who his characters were. And if he knew his characters were, there must be some empirical evidence to figure it out. And I'll tell you what Shlomo does here, which nobody else had thought of before, possibly. A friend of mine, I think I mentioned one time, a friend of mine, Mark Shapiro, told me, he said, you know, theoretically, according to Jewish law, a murderer could walk into a meeting with 400 unmeet women and blow somebody away, and no Jewish court in the world could touch him because it's a woman and they can't testify to court cases. Obviously, that never happened. There's all kinds of course material. He actually showed me this casework, the Rajba and others. These are big rabbis who definitely prosecuted and even applied the death penalty in cases of circumstantial evidence. I remember this conversation actually with Glenn Goldberg. I don't know if anybody knows Glenn Goldberg. He lives on the side of town. He was a district attorney. So I had a conversation with him actually, and somebody had told him that Judaism never accepts circumstantial evidence. It's only, you know, no smoking gun. It has to be witnesses. And I said it's simply not true, and I could show you the case. In fact, the ultimate case, to my mind, is this case. Because to my mind, Shlomo knows what he's doing because about his chachma. Shlomo could figure out what's going on, and he could solve a case without any witnesses whatsoever. That may be new. Because what happened with David? When David had this guy who said, that land was mine, and this guy, Tziva, stole it from me, and Tziva said, no, he traded you. Shlomo, David says, what am I going to do? I can't prove this case. I got no witnesses. Your words, he said, she said, he said, he said. I'm lost. And that's where I think Shlomo's Chachma was above other Chachmas. I think, I don't want to say he invented the idea of jurisprudence, but I think he introduced ideas to jurisprudence that may not have existed formally back then. And that solves all kind of cases. I don't have to worry about tracking down witnesses. They're going to come from afar. I could solve a case that's right in front of my face by checking a few facts. I could look at the babies. I could look at the situation. I could get them in separate rooms. I could talk to who they're related to and who the original fathers were. And bang, I got the case. To my mind, that's the best solution, even though I admit that instead of this whole thing of Shlomo running around who the fathers were, we have a big break. And if it was really true, that Amiri is right, like I think he is, why not just spell out, why not leave it vague? That's the question.
You want to create a certain mystique about Shlomo.
Okay, it's possible. Email, I can go for any answer. I still think the question is valid, but I'm happy to hear any answer. At this point, by the way,
I apologize.
Yeah.
If he knew that the mother of a three-day-old baby had a motivation of wanting to see the baby killed.
Right.
Then why did he present that as an option?
To get it from her own mouth. Because once everybody heard the mother say, you know, Gizru et Ayelet, especially after they heard the other one already say, give the woman, then everybody was clear. Because again, he's on non-Torah grounds here. And therefore, he's got to have some backing. He's got to have the people behind him. So just to make a decision and say, oh, I see this, everybody else would say, I have no idea how you made that decision. But if you see a guy like this make that kind of decision and you support his decision and see how well he was, that gives you support of the king, which is really what the whole this whole dream that was all about. How am I going to rule such a great people? And the answer is, get them to back you up. Get them to see what a chacham you are. And I'm sorry, I'm going to cut just one more time. The last pasuk, look at the last pasuk. It's a beautiful pasuk. It proves, I think, proves the point. Pasuk kap chetz. Vayishmu kol Yisrael at the mishpat. They heard this court case. Asher shafat ha-melech. Vayirum at ha-melech. They were scared of him. Now, according to Rashi, he was scared of him because everybody knew even if they did something in secret, they would find out. But I think they were scared of him because he's one of those frightening guys. They were in awe of him. The guy figured this out. That's amazing. Ki ra'u ki chochmat Elohim b'kirbo. He's like God almost. He's as smart as chochmat Elohim. I translate the word Elohim as God. It's not the only way to translate it. But he's a superpower, a supernatural chochma. Lasot mishpat. And by the way, the word that repeats itself thrice in this pasuk is mishpat. Mishpat, mishpat, mishpat. People looked at him and they said, this guy, I may not like him, I may not want to have dinner with him, he may draft me too much into the army, he may have me working on his Beit HaMikdash too hard, but man, that guy knows how to run a court case.
So he was respected much more than his father, was he?
Correct. I believe he was respected in that sense more than his father.
He
wasn't loved. He wasn't loved as much as his father, and that's something that we'll get into later. That was his problem. In fact, and that's what I said, his father, it always says, Hu rasat staka and mishpat. Staka and mishpat. By Shlomo, you never have the word staka. You only have mishpat. He's a mishpat, mishpat guy. He was, I don't want to say he's a despot, but he was a by-the-numbers, by-the-book kind of guy. I don't think he was the kind of guy to give him big hugs at the end of the court case. He was the kind of guy that if you were guilty, he was going to nail you. And if you were in it, he was going to send you home. And the fact that he was right was a comfort, but that was his quality. And you know, far be it really for us to completely judge what was going on. I'm sorry, I cut you off before. And I
just want to say, you know, according to Meiri, with this theory that this one married the son and this one married the father, then they weren't prostitutes, right? And
they were, right.
That these were regular people.
Yes.
And wouldn't the fathers have been involved in the case? Wouldn't they have?
One had passed. Oh, I'm sorry. I think the Miri says both passed away, father and the son.
Okay.
I know, died in a tragic car accident. The only remaining one is the son of this woman, who's the brother of the father.
Oh,
I'm sorry, not the brother of the father. The son of the father, the brother of the dead son who's married to the other woman.
Okay.
You see why this one, you kind of have to chart this out with a computer.
That's
to be
why
perfectly honest.
He wouldn't be at the court case.
They would be alone. Nobody else would be at the court case, and except the baby, who is the only valuable item in the particular court case. That's how the Miri plays it out. And I have to say, it's just so elegant, to be honest, and it does work in with Dibre Chazal, one of the many opinions of Dibre Chazal. I just love it, and I just, for me, it satisfies all the psukim satisfactorily. Leaving a small void of white and tell the story completely, and it also shows you, boy, Shlomo was not crazy. He knew when you know when he had a unloaded gun, but the woman didn't know it was unloaded. You know what I'm saying? You know, he had her to rights. And it's nice. Anyway, I'm sorry. So.
Or he, you said earlier, you may have picked up on the women. Just weren't talking about the live son. You were talking about the dead son. He might have looked at this being a ploy to have one of them step up and say, no, keep him alive at any cost.
You're right. That maybe goes back to psychological issue, because you saw the second one focus on death, death, death. Even without this whole Yibum case, I could present an idea where Shlomo has a hunch what's going on, and therefore plays on this this death psychology thing that the woman has to force her into a weird decision. I still am a little on...
Which reinforces the fact that he wanted this case to establish a public, public relations. You know, that this was a good case because it would get good press, and it would play up his, his ability to play the press. It was the same as the ability to play the women.
And to knowledge of, and to have knowledge of the defendants that were coming in front of him. It's like a lie detector test. I could just have had. And that actually played without the Miri's thing. That also plays very nicely. It's the sensitivity about Niha Meitz, Vachai. It's also, I don't think there's anything that's going to be 100% satisfactory to these. So there is a certain enigma to them. But I think in both those cases, Shlomo is presented as a great king and a great judge. And I think that's what, and I think that's really where we should leave him, to be honest.
Well, can I make one last?
Oh,
you want something?
Go ahead.
Maybe during that the break there, maybe he was telling the people, other people in the court, what he was planning to do. Maybe he figured out that
it could have been out of the act. It did seem very theatrical. It could have been he trust a few of his clerks.
Yeah.
It's certainly a possibility. I think after it was done, though, the masses saw it. The people sitting in the balconies of the Supreme Court. And I think it was all just a gigantic win for him. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It seems to me that poor David had a hard time.
Yeah.
There were more rebellions, and the kingdom was really divided.
Yeah.
He had a deal with Shaul, and then his son, and then after I think Absalom.
Was this
getting chased rebellions?
Rebellions,
and he.
Is this before this court case?
Yeah. David.
Oh, David.
So
this ends with he was a king over all of Israel.
Right.
So after this point,
actually, he unites Israel in this. People are so into him that he unites them on loyalty. That they are king. It's like they have a hero, and I guess the idea that there's a hero could really. I don't want to say that David wasn't a hero. David inherited a bad lot. He started off his life as a guy rebelling at the king. So once you start that way, you're never going to get everybody to love you. Shlomo has an advantage. He doesn't start off as a rebellious guy. He starts off as a select of the king. I think he builds on top of that to produce something that David couldn't have built. You can't. I think when Hashem told him not to build a Beit HaMikdash, there's no way you could take a guy who starts off his life as rebellious against the king, whose duty is to overthrow the king even though he can't do so physically. Not everybody's going to like him. A lot of people won't, for honest reasons. You can't be that angry at Shimi Ben Gera. Sorry, you can be angry at Shimi Ben Gera for doing it, but you could also be sympathetic. I could sympathize with Shimi Ben Gera not liking David very much, whether he did the right thing. It's like if I don't like the president. Sometimes in the United States you really feel, the people don't like the president so much that people really divide this idea of red and blue, where it's like the red states are rebellious or the blue states are rebellious. And I don't think that that's the truth at all. I think if you get to that point, then you're in trouble. I think most people, they don't have to like a president to believe that he's a president and follow him, and I think that's the greatest sense of America. And I think the same thing with Shlomo, but if you start with a guy, with David's past, it's hard to shake that. And I suspect that David knew it also. I don't know if he knew it. I know Hashem knew it. I knew Hashem knew that he couldn't make a guy who could rule over everybody out of a guy who started off in life rebellion. That's my opinion.
I have a question. If the woman who said it was her baby,
the lying woman,
took the baby, how does that play into the Mary's scenario?
Oh, because then she doesn't have to do Yibum or Chalitza, because you only have to do Yibum or Chalitza when you don't have a child.
So
she would be
so
a single woman with a child.
Why wouldn't she take the baby?
What's that?
Why wouldn't she take the baby?
Oh, because Shlomo gave her a better option. Not only does she not have to do Yibum Chalitza, but if the baby's dead, she doesn't have to be a single mom. So, in the first case, she's not a murderer. She wasn't going
to
murder the baby at night.
She gets to marry.
So she was just going
to
get out of Yibum Chalitza, and she'll be a single mom. I'll live with it. I'll get a babysitter.
Yeah.
And I'll live with it. But when she thinks Shlomo is nuts and is willing to kill the baby, voila, I've solved all my problems.
So then she doesn't have to marry the...
Well, but she can't marry the baby because the baby's dead. And she doesn't have to raise the baby because the baby's dead. In the first case, she wouldn't have to marry the baby because it's her own son. And she wouldn't have to marry anybody else, assuming there's anybody else around, because she has a child. But she would have to raise this child that's not her own. In the second case, once Shlomo presents her a great option, wonderful. I'll take behind what's current number two.
Okay.
that he was betting that one of the women would actually reveal herself.
He was betting. Yeah, absolutely. Don't people in court all the time? I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I suspect that sometimes there are some bets that get lost in court. Question is, what would have happened if she would have said nothing? Would Shlomo have been, I don't know.
What would he have done? What would he have?
I guess it's one of those calculated risks that you take when you're a judge or a lawyer or.
But the woman number one had already ceded ownership of the baby. So
yeah, right.
She
wouldn't have to. That's true. He knew. I think he knew, knowing that the mother would never give up the baby, especially with her focus on Chai, on the fact that it was alive. I don't think he was worried they had to kill the baby. I think he was worried about a miscarriage of justice. That I think that percentage, 5%, 10%. Where the other woman goes, great, I'll take the baby, sorry, see you later, glad the case worked out for me, and then went home. I think Shlomo was concerned about it. I think he knew that would have been a miscarriage of justice, but I think he was willing to take the chance, both for state reasons as well as for, I figured, let's take the 90% chance that I give it to the right woman rather than 10% chance that I goof and give it to the wrong, that the whole thing doesn't work out. I don't know, it's hard to say, would any of us have made the same decision? I don't know, possibly.
According to Meiri, then, if none of the babies had died, this woman would be in bad shape.
No. If her baby was alive, she would. Even though she lost her
childless.
Yeah. So if she had her own child, so she would have been a single mom. It would have been depressing. Her husband, died, and that's depressing. But she would not have had to be stuck to marry some other brother. She had a brother. Her husband had a brother. This other girl's child. But since she had her own child, she doesn't have to marry him because she's not responsible for Yibum Chalitza. You must be childless for Yibum Chalitza to take place. Okay, thank you very much. Next week, as we said, we won't be on, and thank you all for coming, and I hope to see you after the following week. I'll be back Wednesday night, so I plan on continuing after Chol HaMoed.
I'm
going to be away in Florida. The week after Chol HaMoed, that Wednesday, God willing, we'll be here and continue with Perek Daled. Thank you. Chag Kasher V'Sameach, everybody.
When they make the TV program, who's going to play the king and who's going to play the two women?
What's that? The what?
When they make it into a TV program,
right.
Who's going to play the king and who's going to play the two women?
Right.
And are they going to use the Meiri?
I'm going to my in-laws. Leah, where do your parents live? What's the name of the island?
North Bay Village.
It's an island in the bay off of South Beach.
Oh.
One of those, as you're driving to South Beach, there are all those causeways that lead up to this little, live on one of those islands.
How do they
Not
fear?
Star Island,
Enjoy.
Unfortunately. One of those smaller ones.
How do they
Enjoy.
Fear during the hurricane?
Have a good night. Have a good night. What?
How do they fear during the hurricane?
They so far got missed every time.
Wow.
But they're worried.
No, not
I guess you pay the price for, that kind of living.
You live by the water, you worry about floods. You live in the mountains, you worry about...
snowbirds.